Welcome back to North Idaho Now, this is episode 152. Not as cool as 151.
Not as cool.
But you know what? We're still going to go for it. We're still going to try to do our best here. Chance Watson and Molly Roberts bring you the news today. And this episode is brought to you by the Galena Mine. Looking for some help? America's gold and silver-owned Galena Mine in Wallace, Idaho is currently accepting applications for the position of maintenance supervisor. The maintenance supervisor is, and stop me if this makes any sense, for overseeing all aspects of maintenance needs.
Makes
sense to me. The ideal candidate for the position would have an associate's degree in maintenance-related fields, 5+ years of experience, and 2+ years in a supervisory role. This role is an excellent opportunity for work to work on a variety of projects, take charge of your career, and make a difference on a small team in a dynamic work environment. U.S. Silver offers competitive wages, full employee benefits package, which includes medical, dental, vision, life and disability insurance, PTO, 401k, and a pension plan. To apply for this and any other position at the Galena Mine, visit www.americasgold.com/careers. Sounds like a good gig if you don't mind going underground.
Very true. Or overseeing all aspects of maintenance needs.
That too. Fighting the crab people probably takes its toll on maintenance stuff.
It really probably does. Uh-huh. I've heard that the crab people like to, they kind of scuttle around and grab things.
Yes.
So, yeah.
The biggest export into those mines is butter.
Butter. our long-tracking, hilarious crab people joke about Hecla. Or, sorry, Galena. Usually it's about Hecla.
It's usually about Hecla,
Oh, my gosh. Apparently there's crab people in all of the mines.
Yeah.
I mean,
they're a good sponsor, too. They're also hiring.
That's right.
We'll talk about Hecla later
on.
There we go. Molly, it's really hot out.
You know, that's funny. I was going to say the exact same.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah.
Same thing.
Well, I mean, it's
hot.
It's on everybody's minds
because
our minds aren't functioning properly at the moment because it's so hot.
I wish we had a little bit of a period of acclimation would have been nice. Always would have been nice, but here in Idaho, we don't quite
jump right into the deep end, so to speak. Been trying to deal with that a little bit. I'm not somebody who really handles heat well.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody likes extreme weather, but I can function in cold. Like if it's cold, like you're still shivering, you're still not happy. But I can think straight. I can still function.
Okay. See, I get like angry and cold.
Oh no! See, that's with me. Heat.
With heat.
With heat. Yeah.
I
don't
feel like I'm the opposite.
Brain stop
doing work.
Things. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely. I'm not comfortable, I suppose, but definitely I can handle heat better than I can handle the cold.
Gotcha. Okay.
But
you're cold. Maybe just growing up playing ice hockey. Your whole life, you just get used to it.
You get used to it. That's true. That's probably true. That makes sense. You spend a lot of time in the ice, in the rink.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I remember there was this one practice we had. It was we used to skate at Riverfront Park in Spokane.
Mm-hmm.
So like right on, you know, we were right in front of the IMAX. And this is before all the big renovations.
Yep.
We had an early morning practice, like 5 a.m. Get out there. It's the middle of May.
I didn't know there was a 5 a.m.
January, February. And this is basically an open door rink. Like it's an outdoors rink, it has an overhang.
5 a.m.
Yeah, granted, anybody who looks at this now has no idea what I'm talking about because it's definitely been revamped now. But you know, it was an outdoor rink with an overhang, so you didn't get rained on. But it was like kind of pushed down into the ground a little bit, so it was the perfect. You get there, it's you know we're just below under freezing. Under zero. Not under freezing. It's just under zero.
Okay.
And it's so foggy that you can't see the other side of the rink because there's fog on the ice. So we're skating along and our coach decided this was a good day to make us skate lines. So for the basketball equivalent, it's, you know, the line behind the hoop, back and forth. Okay.
That's,
in hockey.
That's about what caused me to quit basketball.
Right there. Okay. There you go. So in hockey, it's same principle. Goal line, blue line, goal line, center line, goal line, blue line, goal line, goal line.
You don't
line
have to back. Do that in theater.
No. No, I don't think there's equivalent in the theater. In the theater, there
no, is. our practices were a little different than that.
Anyway, long story short, he made us skate those, but we threw our gloves and sticks just off to the side and skated with our hands down our pants.
Because
it was so cold that our hand, like, and when you'd get water, if you missed your mouth, your jersey would freeze. So it was, so like you're skating along with like more added weight of frozen ice. Like it was like a starched jersey almost.
Oh my gosh. I think this is my hell. This is my actual hell.
Yeah, it was not the best. But I got McDonald's afterwards.
So. Oh, well, I'm loving it. Well, another sponsor of the show. So.
My late grandfather was a huge fan of McDonald's coffee. That was like his treat in the morning.
At least for me as a kid, there was something special about going to McDonald's.
Yeah. Even now, I'll be honest, I probably am more keen on going to McDonald's breakfast than I am in the afternoon now. Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, granted, there's always that time for some chicken nuggets or something.
I
even appreciate just a good like snack of fries and a Coke.
Coca-Cola
from McDonald's tastes better. We've had the Scoobitzes on the show before to talk about that.
Okay.
A little bit. Way early back in the Shoshone days.
Gotcha.
They came on the show. But yeah, that's definitely a good snack.
It is. No, that's definitely, yeah. I like my drinks of choice are large Powerade, no ice, large half-cut sweet tea.
Okay.
So you don't get as,
That's like a Sonic concoction almost.
Right, yeah. So my sister worked at McDonald's for a little bit, so I know some of the, you know, I mean.
I think all Americans should be required to work at least 6 months in fast food.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You get a different perspective in life.
I have not worked fast food. I've worked in retail. I've worked as a server. Okay, and server,
Maybe broaden that a little bit. Yeah.
I think working.
Customer service. You have to work in customer service. There you go.
I think once you work in customer service, you get it. I agree. Right. That no matter what position necessarily maybe you work, you're like, oh, I get it. People are demanding.
What was your favorite early job? Like you know, like when we're in high school or something like that. Like it's...
Favorite early job. Besides the Sixth Street melodrama, the fact that I get paid to act on the stage. That was pretty cool.
Paid actress, whatever. No big deal.
Right, paid actress. Right. I did enjoy, I surprisingly had a, this is kind of funny, I had a landscaping job for a little bit.
Really?
So the Christian author, Frank Peretti, has a pretty big piece of land out kind of by Kingston area.
Okay.
And he was good friends with my parents, and so I needed a job over the summer, and they had like a landscaper already, but she was kind of like, okay, Molly can be my assistant. So I would just like deadhead things. I would wander around. I mean, pretty much it was just me listening to music, wandering around this cool property.
There is like, something very, like, when you're young and you watch Hank Hill, like, just get so much satisfaction out of mowing his yard.
Right.
You're when you're young, like, that is, like, I don't want to go cut the yard now.
Right.
Now but as an adult, you're like, there's something very... Like, soothing about this.
There was definitely soothing parts of it, and just learning about how to care for different things. It was interesting. It definitely wasn't for me. Had to get up really early,
which
we've learned not for me.
Yeah.
And
actors don't get up early.
No. Oh, actors and servers, we don't get up early.
Yeah, right.
We are late night people.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. Actually, I was thinking of that when I went to the concert recently because the Goo Goo Dolls didn't start playing until about 9 p.m. And I was like, I am a creative.
Right.
I was like, I get this. The sun is just now setting.
Sure.
Now is when I sing.
Right. Now this is my prime. Yeah.
The bard shall sing her tune.
When the sun goes down.
Exactly. I was like, I get it. You are my people.
That's so good. I love that. I would probably have to go with, I mean, as I just got done saying that I hated the heat. I did enjoy my time at Home Depot. That wasn't bad.
Yeah.
Sonic would be close.
Yes.
Sonic had a lot of highs, but a lot of lows too.
Right. I bet.
Staffing
yeah.
stuff there, and that was, but it was fun to roller skate.
Yes, that is cool.
That wasn't bad, so that was good. But you know, I always had the few odd jobs. I bucked bales, hay bales, and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I worked for a little bit at the animal hospital, and I realized that wasn't for me when I walked in and they were doing it. It's not an autopsy. I can't remember what it is for animals,
sure,
but it's similar.
The equivalent.
Right? They're trying to find out what happened.
Yeah.
And I walked in and,
I wasn't feeling it anymore.
What? I was like, oh, right. If I walk in here, there could be something. Right.
Sure.
And then also walking past some black bags and someone telling me, like, don't move those bags and me realizing what I was like, ah, okay, no, I just wanted to, like, hang out with animals all day.
Sure.
This is a little much.
I may have been desensitized to that. I had, you know, I jumped around, parents divorced when I was very young.
Right.
So I jumped between two different worlds, and on the other world where I spent a lot of time on Western Washington, especially on a 998 acre farm.
On a farm. Yes, sometimes during the summer.
You know, when you're brought in by your grandpa to the slaughterhouse.
Right.
You get desensitized a little bit to it.
That makes sense.
And you know, it's funny, like if you talk to anybody that's in that industry, they have to kind of, I mean, I don't want to say dehumanize because they're not humans, but like you have to, like you can't name your cow Billy or something like that. Like it's cattle.
No, it's a completely different. Well, and I remember like when I lived in Southern Idaho, my cousins lived out in Nampa, kind of in the farm. And I remember, they'd be like, you know, oh, be careful when you go out in the barn because there's barn cats.
Yeah.
And like sometimes the kittens die and they just are, you know, like flat. And I was like, what? Are you talking? And they just said it so nonchalantly.
Yep.
That I was like, what do you mean there's dead kittens in the barn? And they were like, that's just what, they're just barn cats.
Right.
I'm like,
they're borderline feral. Like
exactly. And it was like, this is a whole nother world.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, it is. with the cows in that instance, like it's, talk to anybody that works in that industry.
Right.
Like it's, I mean, they may be very cute from afar, I understand. I can understand the cute nature of a cow. They're really not smart animals.
No, they're pretty dumb.
They're really, really dumb.
Pretty
dumb-dumbs. So it's like, so even like when they're part of your job and your livelihood involves like taking care of and rounding up these very, very dumb animals.
Right.
It's, you see that side of the world too on it. So, you know, it's, I understand maybe some city folk probably, it's hard to wrap your head around that because you don't see that every day.
Right.
But
that's part of it.
But hey,
exactly.
We all, city folk need the country folk to make the stuff. And the country folk need the city folk to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
There you go.
The world goes right. I think the lesson here today is just everybody needs to get along.
Everybody needs to get along.
We all need each other.
That's right.
Can't as much as we don't like them city slickers.
Yeah, them city slickers coming in here.
We need them to buy the stuff. Who's gonna buy a jar of naturally grown organic honey for $25 a jar?
Besides the city slickers.
suckers. Just kidding. Somebody's listening to this show. I just paid for that. Like that. Was...
Yeah, I just bought $25 worth of honey.
Yeah, it did.
It's... Well, sorry.
Whoops, you've been had. Sorry. You lost.
You've been had.
What is that? Our favorite line from, What We Do in the Shadows is back now for new season.
Ooh.
But I love that. And Guillermo walks out. Are you going to let him get away with that? He's left. He's gotten away with it. He has gotten away with it. Love that line. Okay, ready to get into some news, Molly?
I'm ready.
Let's do it. North Idaho State Fair is set to celebrate its 100th anniversary this year from August 19th to 28th and wants you to join in on the fun. From monster truck and extreme bull riding to carnival rides and live concerts, there's something for everyone at the fair. Molly, could you look up who the live concerts are real quick?
I can.
I think we need to, we've been talking about live concerts, and I think we need to let the fans know. Who's actually there. For the first time ever, the North Idaho State Fair is offering golden tickets that give holders lifetime access to the fair, and all proceeds will go to a new livestock building. For tickets and more information, visit NIS Fair. That's NISFAIR.fun. FUN.
Mm.
Molly, do we know who's there? Again?
I just looked, but it did not. Idaho State Fair performances. I saw something about the Doo-Wah Riders.
That sounds something. That sounds right. North Idaho.
Let's see here.
Fair. By the way, another shameless plug.
Okay. Wait a dang second. The All American Rejects.
Okay. I think I've heard of them before.
What? So yes, it does say Party in the Dirt concert series.
Okay.
The All American Rejects, Skillet, Jordan Davis are some that I see here.
Okay. I mean, that's a good diverse lineup right there.
That's pretty cool.
Truly something there for everybody.
Yep. Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, that's what it looks like, the lineup. So it's every night, August 22nd, 23rd, 24th, they'll have a different band.
Perfect.
Yeah, All American Rejects. When you see my face, hope it gives you hell, hope it gives you hell. I am ready to get angsty. All
right.
Excellent.
Embrace the angst, everybody. All right, let's move into Coeur d'Alene Post Falls Press headlines for Saturday, July 23rd. Headline, police openings take toll. This is by Bill Bewley. The Coeur d'Alene Police Department has the most openings, 14, since Police Chief Lee White came on board in 2014. Quote, before, I could fill those openings fairly quickly, he said, but not now. The impact of so many unfilled police posts has been substantial, including canceled vacations, overtime, and officer burnout. Quote, you can only work so many days of overtime before you get tired of it, he said. But even with it being the busiest time of the year, with thousands of tourists in town, there hasn't been a decline in police services, White said. Help is on the way, though. Several job offers have been accepted, and a few may start in August. White has been interviewing candidates, but the toughest obstacle to overcome to put them on patrol soon is something White can't control, housing costs. White said escalating home prices and rents over the past few years were the start of troubles with filling open positions on the force. The median price of a single-family home in Kootenai County, about $560,000, is proving to be a primary reason candidates stay away. A 0.13-acre vacant lot in Coeur d'Alene recently sold for $350,000. Man, that must have been some really nice property.
Really nice land.
Yeah. The average rent for the survey respondents was $1,648 a month, which is just ridiculous. Quote, it's harder to make the move, White said. That's why he's hoping signing bonuses, something Coeur d'Alene Police has never offered, may help. In his proposed 2022-2023 budget, White is asking for $80,000 for bonuses to help cover moving costs for new officers. Moving is, quote, an expensive proposition, he said. Quote, they still have to feed their families, White said. If you can't find a place and you and your family call home, it's very difficult to move them thousands of miles. The proposed signing bonus, which must be approved by the city council, would mitigate moving costs and could make a difference between a candidate accepting or rejecting a job with Coeur d'Alene Police. They could get half the money before the move and half after starting their new job. Quote, signing bonuses tend to make sense, White said. White also added that there are factors in housing that keep their number of police force openings higher and making recruiting tougher. Candidates are reluctant to get into law enforcement, he said, due to outcries in some cities against the men in blue. Those leaving military service used to move into law enforcement, but fewer do so, White said. Some are leaving the field for good, no longer wanting to be police officers or seeking a new career path. But Coeur d'Alene has a reputation as a great place to live and work, White said, and is known in the community that supports its police. That's why, with 96 sworn officers, the Coeur d'Alene police force generally averages only two or three openings. Some officers want to work, quote, specifically in Coeur d'Alene for its methods and culture, White said. Entry-level police officers make from $25.58 an hour to $39.70 an hour, according to the city's website. White said, including benefits, a starting officer's compensation can total about $90,000. Quote, we need to make sure the officers are being paid a livable wage to work in North Idaho. White hopes his department is back to full staff soon and believes bonuses would help. Quote, this last year has been very difficult for us, White said. I mean, that's not horrible pay.
Right. I agree. Yeah. Not horrible pay.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. livable. Mm-hmm. It's doable. Yeah. And throw a bonus in on there. Okay. Sure.
Right.
Not a problem.
All right. Riding the wind. This is by Devin Weeks. The biggest grin possible. That's how Dog Smile Adventures founder Captain John Totten describes how the program got its name. Quote, a dog smile is an expression of unadulterated happiness. You're so happy that you don't care about how you look, or how you're seen, or what anyone else thinks. Dog Smile Adventures Therapeutic Sailing has given many humans a reason to smile that happy dog smile. From the completely inexperienced to sailors at heart, it's a program that makes sailing accessible for all. Quote, you can see their faces light up, Coeur d'Alene dad Tim Neary said Friday. Neary and his three girls were Dog Smile Adventures' first clients when the nonprofit launched in 2020. They've been out about four times this summer. Two of Neary's daughters are on the autism spectrum, and he is a full-time caregiver for his eldest, Megan, 25. He said sailing has been a huge boost of confidence for them, especially Megan. As a dad who finds himself overwhelmed at times, his heart finds peace when he sees his daughters team up for a sailing expedition, smiles on their faces, and the wind in their hair. Quote, to have such a unique experience for them in a beautiful place like Ponderay, it's such a positive thing. There is something very therapeutic and healing about sailing. Totten's vision has sailed into a successful venture. He said more than 300 guests have enjoyed Dog Smile Adventures since its inception, with many repeat participants. Quote, it's been a passion project, Totten said. It was a big swing, but I went for it. It was a big risk to take, but it was really brought on by the pandemic. It put me in a position where I had to change direction. The idea of giving sailing to people who don't have access is really what's underneath it all. When people buy a lesson or a day sail with Dog Smile Adventures, they're also buying a sailing experience for someone else. Dog Smile Adventures offers sailboat rides, lessons, a racing academy, and custom experiences. Its focus is on underserved communities, such as veterans, local youth, victims of domestic violence, and those struggling with drug and alcohol addiction. But Dog Smile programs are open to anyone interested in experiencing the healing power of sailing. The nonprofit is in need of involvement and support. Shore crew, deckhands, media specialists, nonprofit administrators, and sponsors are necessary for Dog Smile to continue to offer paid and donated sailing experiences. For more information, please visit dogsmileadventures.org.
Very cool.
I could get down with it.
Yeah, that'd be sweet. Moving on, Sunday, July 24th headline, Keeping Pace with Growth. This is by Joe Taylor. For decades, steadily growing student populations have driven an ongoing need for Kootenai County school districts to acquire land, build schools, and hire more teachers for new classrooms. However, a drastically changing economy is exacerbating those challenges for local schools. Kootenai County has seen some of the highest population growth of any county in the U.S. over the past decade. This population growth, coupled with a low supply of affordable housing, has led to realty prices to soar. For home sellers and investors, rising real estate prices are cause for celebration, but for renters, businesses, and school districts needing space to build new facilities, high realty prices pose a real problem. Acquiring land has become far more
cost intensive.
Oh, yes. That was like cost intensive is definitely not one
it
word.
It was, yeah.
for the school district, but building new schools isn't optional. Quote, this year we've seen more growth in the secondary schools, said Jeff Voller, the Coeur d'Alene District's Director of Operations. That's why a new middle school is so critical for us, because we will continue to see them busting at the seams. According to Voller, it would cost millions of dollars to buy enough land for a single school in the current market, but even before a school can be built, a lot of costly preparation takes place. Engineering, site prep, sewer, water, and power can cost hundreds of thousands, if not more, according to Mabin. And those costs are only the beginning. The big ticket item in the school building is the building itself. Quote, a middle school is probably going to cost anywhere from $35 to $40 million, Voller said. Another significant factor restricting the development of new schools today is a lack of teachers and staff. With housing prices being as high as they are in Coeur d'Alene, it's becoming increasingly difficult for those on a teacher salary to move into the area. Housing prices have dramatically increased over the past 5 years. According to a housing availability and affordability study completed in December of 2021 by researchers at the University of Idaho, 44% of Kootenai County employers had hiring difficulties due to a lack of affordable housing. That's very true. In 2016, 3 out of 4 households in the county would have been able to afford a median-priced home. Now, less than 1 out of 4 households can afford the same home. According to the University of Idaho study, current rent and mortgages in Kootenai County are over $1,500 per month on average. With a monthly housing cost of $1,500, a new teacher would need to make over $60,000 a year to be able to afford rent or own an average-priced home in Kootenai County. Finding funding to build a new school is difficult in Idaho. Quote, the bar is high, said Voller. That's where the challenge comes in. Where many states provide some supplemental funding for the construction of new schools, Idaho provides exactly none. Without funding from the state, virtually all the funds necessary to build a school come from local voter-approved property tax measures. However, in Idaho, the requirement to pass a bond is 66.67% supermajority, the highest threshold in the country. Yeah, it's pretty rough.
Yeah.
To solve school funding problems, many measures have been proposed. However, most proposals require state laws to be changed, another significant obstacle. In 2021, a resolution was passed at an Idaho School Boards Association meeting that calls for schools to be allowed to collect impact fees from developers to assist in the process of building new schools. The resolution has yet to be taken up for consideration by the Idaho legislature. One development company has stepped up to help the school district in which it's building new homes. Corsa Development Group, a land development company in Post Falls, recently donated $16,500 to the Lakeland Joint School District to help offset some of the burden that new homes in their 33-lot Rathdrum subdivision may have on the school district. The donation equates to $500 per lot. During the City of Rathdrum's planning and zoning process for Grace Meadows in 2021, Lakeland School District officials spoke up about the effect community growth has in having on their education system. Without impact fees or developers providing land for schools, it's difficult for the school district to keep up with growth, they wrote. The Grace Meadows subdivision is near the intersection of Nagel Road and Thayer Street. Students living there will be in the Betty Kiefer Elementary, Lakeland Junior High, and Lakeland High Attendance Zone. While other developers have donated land to the school district, Corsa Development is the first developer to donate a dollar amount. The developer for another subdivision, Lakeland Landings, which was approved by the City of Rathdrum in February, has agreed to make a similar payment to the school district. The course of money for Grace Meadows was presented during the Lakeland Joint School District's last monthly board meeting. Quote, quote, "I pray you're leading the way for others to follow," said Board Chair Michelle Thompson. Thank you.
All righty.
Just reiterating kind of what we already know.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Best Blinds and Awnings has the premier business for window treatments in Spokane and North Idaho since 1999. With options from window shutters to shades to vertical blinds and everything in between, owner Jason and his team continually exceed customer expectations to provide the best blinds and outdoor awnings for your home. Awnings are in stock now, so don't miss out on enhancing your outdoor space. Call 208-664-5858 today. Moves into Monday, July 25th headlines.
Oh, this was by our Chance Watson.
Mm.
Wow.
I guess I can read this one,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, go ahead.
Headline, fire season gets its start. I worked this one up. Wildfire season has once again arrived in North Idaho a little later than usual. Heavy winter snowpack and spring precipitation helped delay this year's fire season, but numerous storms and neglectful humans are helping ramp up forest fire activity. Quote, "In the last week, the Idaho Panhandle National Forest have responded to 12 wildfire starts," said Carrie Maddox, Forest Service Fire Information Officer, in a July 19th news release. "Most have been from the plentiful lightning seen across the area, but a few have been abandoned campfires. While the vast majority of these fires were small, roughly one-tenth of an acre, a minor incident can easily become a major one. Wildland firefighters are currently battling the Diamond Watch Fire, a 5.5 mile wide of Nordman, Idaho, and roughly 11 miles west of Priest Lake. As of Sunday, the lightning-caused blaze has burned roughly 7 acres on the northeast side of Diamond Peak in Ponderay County, Washington. The fire danger across the Idaho Panhandle is moderate at the moment in all areas. This means that fires can start from most accidental causes, but with the exception of lightning fires in some areas, the number of starts is generally low." Quote, "Fires in open, cured grassland will burn briskly and spread rapidly on windy days," Maddox said. Adding to that, timber fires spread slowly to moderately fast. The average fire is of moderate intensity, although heavy concentrations of fuel, especially draped fuel, may burn hot. Short-distance spotting may occur, but it's not persistent. Fires are not likely to become serious, and control is relatively easy. Maddox explains that a good indicator of wildfire risk, and one of the main factors that influences fire danger rating, is called the Energy Release Component, or ERC. The ERC is a number related to the available energy, BTUs, per unit area, or square foot, within the flaming front at the head of the fire. The ERC is considered a composite fuel moisture index as it reflects the contribution of all live and dead fuels to potential fire intensity. As live fuels cure and dead fuels dry, the ERC will increase and can be described as a build-up index. Quote, "Last year around this time, several areas across the Idaho Panhandle set record-high ERCs," Maddox said. "This year we have seen record lows. That being said, July and August temperatures and precipitation have much more influence on wildfire potential than spring weather does. When lightning is forecasted, Maddox said fire managers keep a close eye on lightning on the lightning map to focus patrols in a specific area, and they can also order a detection flight. Detection flights can consist of qualified aerial observers riding in a fixed-wing aircraft flying a predetermined grid or the lightning map, depending on time and priorities. Aerial observers relay detailed information to outer agency dispatch center in Coeur d'Alene, then district duty officers prioritize incidents for initial attack firefighters. On average, though, human-caused wildfires make up 87% of all wildfire occurrences annually. Quote, we are lucky not to have a dominant trend in human-caused fire starts in North Idaho, but they are still consistently occurring, Maddox said. Although in the minority so far, human-caused starts are often in areas with the highest potential to threaten life and home, check your chains, dispose of cigarettes properly, and never leave a campfire unattended. Maddox encourages campers to use the drown, stir, and feel method to ensure a campfire is fully extinguished. To report a wildfire, call 208-772-3283 or call 911. For more information about current wildfires on the Idaho Panhandle National Forest, call the fire line at fire info line, not the fire line. Call up the firefighters on the fire line. Hey, what's going on
What's going on, guys?
The fire info line at 208-557-8813. The Forest Service recommends residents sign up for the emergency alerts through their county. For more information about developing an evacuation plan, evaluating landscapes, or learning about fire ecology and management, visit IdahoFireWise.org.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Especially after the
So far, we're doing okay.
We're doing okay.
Doing all right.
Which is good.
I think this time last year, things were a lot worse.
On fire, everything. Yeah.
It's not good.
All right. Rosie Cedar Project aims to improve forest health. A 14,000-acre forest health project that includes logging has received a green light from the U.S. Forest Service. The work is not expected to impact wolverines, which have reportedly been seen in the area. The Rosie Cedar site is located along the south side of the Interstate 90 corridor between Highway 97 and Highway 3 on the Coeur d'Alene River Ranger District.
Were they fighting the invading Russian forces, though?
I guess we'll see. We'll have to keep reading on.
Okay.
USFS has prepared a decision notice and finding of no significant impact, according to a press release. Quote, the project is designed to improve forest health and resiliency to disturbances such as insects, disease, drought, and high-severity wildfire.
And commies.
And communists. Under the proposed action, forest health improvements would be achieved through vegetation treatments like regeneration, timber harvest, pre-commercial thinning, and prescribed fire. Those activities would take place on about 4,200 acres within the overall project area. Logging would occur on about 3,400 acres, and prescribed fire is planned in harvest treatment units to deal with excess activity fuels, the release said. According to the environmental assessment report, wolverines have been recorded in and near the Rosie Cedar Project. Quote, based on wildlife analysis, the proposed action may cause wolverines to avoid areas where implementation is actively occurring. Disturbance, however, would be temporary and short in distance. The proposed action is not likely to jeopardize the continued existence of the North American wolverine. So.
Okay.
Wolverine is fine. Everyone leave him alone.
Well, yeah, all they wanted to be was left alone.
Exactly, that's all Logan wants.
They were going Oh, we're going Red Dawn and X-Men. Wolverine here. Yeah, wow. All right. I mean, it works both ways, I think. Oh my God, can you imagine Wolverine in Red Dawn? Like Hugh Jackman's Wolverine is in Wolverine running around with the Wolverines.
Oh my gosh.
This is like Inception, Red Dawn, and Wolverine.
And Wolverine.
I'd watch that film.
Yeah. I think we need
I'd watch it.
Christopher Nolan to direct.
Yeah. I would watch this. Mm-hmm. All right. Moving on. Are we into Tuesday now?
We are. Tuesday. Into Tuesday.
July 26th headline. Marathon swimmer goes across the lake. At least I think that was the headline. I think it got cut off. But you'll find out. We'll find out here as we read along. This
marathon is swimmer.
I don't think the headline was just marathon swimmer. That might have been my fault, gang. My bad. We all make mistakes. It's hot out, you know?
It's hot.
It's we super can't hot. Think straight. Clint, it's hot out. Okay? Give me us a break. All right. This is by Bill Bewley. On Sunday afternoon, Kim Bowler began swimming at Heyburn State Park. For 24 miles later, she stopped. The Liberty Lake woman was reportedly the first person to swim the length of the Lake Coeur d'Alene, finishing on the shores of Tubbs Hill to the cheers of a small crowd of supporters, including her two children, Monday morning. It took the 39-year-old open water marathon swimmer 16 hours and 38 minutes to complete her quest. What? When she returned to solid ground, Bowler was proud and tired.
She swam for 16 hours?
Uh-huh. That is impressive. Yeah.
Dang!
She stood as somebody who can swim 0 hours.
It's very impressive.
Yeah. She stood up, smiled, and walked ashore. Then she turned around, looked out on the lake, held her hands to her face, and cried. I come from a family of criers, she said late Monday afternoon.
I feel you, girl.
In foot rounds. Molly's like, I just want to hug her.
I'll give you a little hug.
After receiving congratulations and talking to friends, Bowler headed home to recover, joined by her husband, Chris, also deserving of a rest as he paddled much of the route alongside his wife in a kayak. Quote, I was excited to get home and sleep for a little bit, she said. Bowler, a U.S. Masters swimmer who trains at the Croc Center under Coach Mike Hamm, followed marathon swimming federal rules, which meant no wetsuit.
Whoa.
I guess the water's kind of warm right now, but still, though. She could wear a wetsuit, goggles, and a cap. She could wear a swimsuit, goggles, and cap, nothing that would aid buoyancy. Okay. She wasn't allowed to intentionally grab onto any kind of support, such as a kayak or boat.
Dang.
Even while taking nutrition, 8 ounces of carbohydrate, electrolyte drink, or a banana or granola bar, every 45 minutes tossed to her in a bottle, she had to tread water at the same time. What?
Oh, my goodness gracious.
It went smoothly, said
Chance
friend.
Chance can't even think
no,
about
is,
how
I don't
to do
even,
that.
I don't even understand. That's she might
tread
as well,
water means
she might
nothing
as well just
Chance.
Said she just walked on Mars. Like, what do you mean? What do you mean you did that? It went smoothly, said friend Anna Love, which isn't surprising. She noted that Bowler swam 12 miles last year in Lake Ponderay from Bayview to Maiden Rock as a tune-up. Okay. Over the last few years, Kim has really embraced her love for open water swimming and has spent countless hours and many swims building up to this moment, Love wrote. Bowler set out from a rocky beach at Chacolet, yeah. With kayak escort before crossing under the Chacolet Bridge, a short stretch of the St. Joe River and into Lake Coeur d'Alene, eventually meeting up with her boat support team. It was a beautiful 90-degree day with calm waters. Quote, it was really fun starting, she said. But it got tougher. Physically, she held up, other than the annoyance of getting caught up in weeds early on and tired arms. Several times mentally, she wanted to quit. Quote, the hardest part was getting over the discouraging thoughts, she said. I'm just sick of swimming, went through her head. This stinks. I want it to end. But her team rooted her on. I get you, girl. I got it.
I just tired of swimming.
Yeah, I understand. But her team rooted her on, and she rallied. Bowler plans to sight off the boat at night, but couldn't. So her husband, Chris, was beside her to keep her on course. Night swimming was new. She saw a shooting star. The water was like glass, and it was calm and peaceful until she bumped into a log. Quote, now I'm ready to see the sunrise, she said, laughing. Howard Burns, one of the support crew, said Bowler was tough throughout. Her final steady stroke, still strong, brought her home to Beacon Point at Tubbs Hill. It was 8:44 a.m.
Oh.
Bowler isn't sure what's next, but ideas are brewing in her head. There are other lakes to conquer. From now, she wants to enjoy this one. Later Monday, she was still in a bit of a disbelief as she had done it. Quote, this was one of the ones I really feel like I wanted to check off my bucket list, she said. Bowler is also coached by Sarah Thomas, also a marathon swimmer, and the first person to complete the 4 consecutive crossings of the English Channel. That's impressive. She praised her coaches, family, and support team. Quote, I could have not done this without them, she said.
Wow.
So there's a lot of people that are doing a lot of things that I just don't believe are possible, but okay.
Wowie. That's pretty
good for
incredible.
Them. Really good for them.
Incredible.
Yep.
All right. Commissioners, consider impact fees. This is by Kay Thornbrew. County commissioners indicated that they're open to imposing impact fees on development that includes a commitment to hiring more patrol deputies and completing unfinished housing units at the jail. What remains to be seen is whether the county can hire the employees it would have to promise in exchange for the fees. The impact fee plan, which has not been finalized, would include a commitment from the county to hire 29 patrol deputies over the next decade. The number is what's needed to maintain the current level of service based on the county's projected growth. The new hires would necessitate additional space, about 20,000 feet, in the form of a substation or in addition to the sheriff's office. Ann Westcott of Galena Consulting, the Boise-based firm hired by the county to research impact fees, asked commissioners on Monday for assurances that hiring that many deputies is feasible. Quote, I don't want to ask development to pay impact fees to build space for patrol deputies if we're not going to be able to hire that many. The county would also commit to completing two unfinished housing units at the consistently overcrowded jail. The shells of these pods were built during the last jail expansion in 2018 and could house another 108 people. Commissioner Leslie Duncan expressed concerns about whether the county could adequately staff the finished pods. Until recently, she pointed out, one unit at the jail was closed due to lack of staffing. Quote, it would be a matter of getting fully up to staff with what we have now. Then we could build out those pods. Kootenai County Sheriff Bob Norris has been vocal about staffing shortages at the jail, which he attributes largely to low rate wages. Detention deputies begin at $22.87 per hour. Though a recent inspection by the Idaho Sheriff's Association showed that staffing is in compliance with state standards, Norris maintains that the ratio of inmates to detention deputies is too high, and hiring remains a challenge. Duncan said a recent analysis indicated the cost of 29 more patrol deputies would commit the county to a 1% increase in taxes in perpetuity. Because current commissioners cannot bind future boards, Westcott noted, impact fees would not be endangered if the county can't fund the additional deputies in the future. Galena Consulting will reportedly move forward with creating a report on impact fees. Commissioners will likely receive recommendations in early September. For now, the question of staffing remains the key one. Quote, if we're going to grow, we're going to need to fund more officers. The money is here. We just need to make sure we can staff them. They need money and staffing for those pods. We've said it before. I'm sure we'll say it again.
Nope. This is not going to be the end of this.
Pods. I know they love our podcast.
Not to be confused. Yeah, with the podcast or those delicious Tide Pods.
Right. Not eaten by millennials. Yeah. I have confirmed that many times on the air.
That wasn't us, folks.
It was not us.
Hecla Mining Company is a leading low-cost silver producer with operating silver mines in Alaska, Idaho, and Mexico, and is a growing gold producer with operating mines in Quebec, Canada, and Nevada. They're the largest primary silver producer in the U.S., responsible for one-third of the silver produced in our nation. Their philosophy is to operate mines safely by promoting a deeply rooted value-based culture, leveraging mining skills developed over the company's long history, and by innovating new practices. To learn more about Hecla Mining Company, please visit HeclaMining.com. Moving into Shoshone News Press headlines for Tuesday, July 26th. Headline, Post Falls Man Convicted in Property Damage Case.
Post Falls Man.
And this was by Josh McDonald.
Not Chance Watson.
No, it wasn't me. Gilbert Marson was found guilty Friday of two counts of malicious injury to property following a jury trial in Shoshone County. Marson, 45, Post Falls, was charged in April following a multi-agency investigation surrounding locks that were cut to gain access to a gated road. Along with his son Austin, Marson cut the locks in order to drive a Toyota Tacoma into privately owned timber company lands following an intentional internal investigation. Of course it was intentional. Internal investigation by both the Mulpus Woodlands Group and the Stimson Lumber, which included video footage. The Bureau of Land Management's Investigative Division worked with the Shoshone County Sheriff's Office to identify the individuals in the video. According to police records, once located, Marson initially denied his involvement and pleaded not guilty. Shoshone County Deputy Prosecutor Scott Sargent represented the state during the trial, which was presided over by visiting Benoit County Judge Patrick McFadden. who is assisting Shoshone County as it works its way through a long backlog of criminal cases. During the trial, the jury was allowed to see the video evidence which captured the defendant in the action. Then, during his closing argument, Sergeant pointed out the defendant's dishonesty with law enforcement when initially questioned and asked of the jury whether they thought the individual who lied to law enforcement was being truthful with them now. The jury returned a quick guilty verdict, and Marson was also handed his sentence. Prior to trial, the state offered Marson a deal in which, in exchange for pleading guilty to just one of the counts, he would have been responsible for court costs and the cost to replace the locks. However, after refusing the state's offer and forcing a jury trial, Marson was fined $600, ordered to pay $315 for court costs, and $444.91 in restitution for the damaged gate, a total of $1,359.91, with 90 days of jail on each count, which the judge will suspend if the fines, court costs, and restitution are paid in a timely manner. Shoshone County Prosecuting Attorney Ben Allen let the public know that his office takes cases like this very seriously. Quote, as a friendly reminder to citizens both local and from out of the area, the ability to join and recreate on public and private timber company lands depends on our ability to abide by the rules established for those roadways, Allen said. Individuals damaging property belonging to the BLM, Forest Service, or timber companies will result in investigation and prosecution by local authorities.
Wow.
Trespassing, not a good thing.
Don't trespass.
And if the gate's locked, like even if you think that the gate is locked incorrectly, like it shouldn't be locked, still don't cut the locks.
Don't cut the locks.
Yeah, like call somebody.
Right. Yeah, that's very true. All righty. Well, moving on to a story that I wrote. Wallace celebrates first Silver Valley Pride. The center of the universe was filled with every color of the rainbow during the first Silver Valley Pride event this past Saturday. Quote, holding pride in the Silver Valley was long overdue, said Ali Koski, the creator of the event and owner of Oliver's Mercantile in Wallace. Quote, there are so many people in our community that haven't had a chance to experience a sense of belonging here, and it's time that we give representation and visibility to the LGBTQIA+ members and allies of Shoshone County. The inaugural event began with a family festival, with free family activities like face painting, balloon art, kids karaoke, bubbles, yard games, and cartoon family portraits by Ara Gotham Art. Quote, it was an amazing from start to finish. Businesses in Wallace were proud and welcoming. The city of Wallace supported us, and we had a wonderful turnout of families and people from all parts of the valley. It was a beautiful and historic day. The second part of the day held a pub crawl with numerous Wallace businesses showing support as the crawlers made their way to different businesses around the town, satiating their thirst with alcoholic or non-alcoholic drink choices. Erin Nansel, a Silver Valley native who participated in both the family day and pub crawl, can't wait for next year's event. Two trophies were voted on by the pub crawlers, including Best Pride Drink Special and Bar with the Most Pride. Silver Corner Bar took home the best drink with their Pride Berry Slushy, which admittedly was delicious and refreshing. I enjoyed it. While their neighbors at 6th and Cedar won the Most Pride Award. A massive amount of planning went into this event by Koski to ensure that the first year was a safe and inclusive family event for Wallace. Koski has worked with Coeur d'Alene's North Idaho Pride Alliance for their Pride Festival and understood while planning that keeping everyone safe was the top priority. In the wake of last month's Pride celebration in Coeur d'Alene, which included the arrest of 31 members of the white supremacist group, Patriot Front, who had allegedly come to North Idaho in an effort to disrupt the event, security became an intense focal point. Koski secured the Shoshone County Sheriff's Department, who extended their full support and supplied a deputy for the duration of the event, while also using mutual aid from the Idaho State Patrol and Kootenai County Sheriff's Department, as well as a private security firm. Quote, if anything should be escalated to a certain level, we have support. And because my focus and business's focus will be on the event and making sure it goes smoothly, I thought it was important to have an actual security team in place. Overall, the event went incredibly smoothly, and Koski was thrilled with the reception from Wallace community, saying, I am so grateful for the support we were shown to organize this event. Shoshone County stepped up today and showed that we are a strong, welcoming, and supportive community for all.
Sounds like it was a fun time.
It was a fun time. We missed you, Chance.
I know.
We partied without Chance.
I had a Chance
had other plans.
Out at Mad Bomber for some other stuff. So.
Next year.
Next year for sure.
Next year we'll be blading all about it.
Ooh, that will be fun. Yep. Home of the lowest prices in all things outdoor since 1975, Black Sheep Sporting Goods is your one-stop shop for all your camping, fishing, hunting, and clothing needs. Open Monday through Saturday from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. and Sundays from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Check out Black Sheep's new location in the Silver Lake Mall. Be sure to also check out www.blacksheepidaho.com and receive free shipping on orders over $100. Black Sheep Sporting Goods, celebrating 45 years as your favorite sporting goods store. Moving up north through the Bonner County Daily Beast Sandpoint headlines. Whoop. Saturday, July 23rd, Camp Bay sewage plant okayed. This is by Daniel Radford.
Okay.
Despite community concerns, the Bonner County Zoning Commission voted unanimously to approve M3's wastewater treatment facility next to Camp Bay. All five commissioners were in attendance, with one joining via Zoom. The project still needs approval from the Idaho Department of Environmental Quality and the Panhandle Health District before construction can begin. Fred Arn, a Camp Bay resident who also manages 50feet.net and is resisting M3's development plans, brought up the application's inaccurate map because it did not show South Camp Bay Road. Another concern with the application arose due to another alleged inaccuracy for the conditional use permit. JUB engineers who were contacted by M3 for the proposed facility wrote that, quote, there are no lakes, streams, rivers, or other bodies of water on the site. At the public meeting, JUB engineer and planner Brad Marshall said a small stream crossed the western edge of the proposed project. He also explained that there is also water on the site in North Idaho, especially seasonally. He still determined that there are no bodies of water on the site. In PhD's response to the application, Tim French wrote that, quote, PhD did observe numerous water bodies, creeks, streams, drainages, swales, etc. on the site. The proposed wastewater system infrastructure will be going near, over, or under many water bodies. Okay, so pretty much the exact opposite of what he said.
Yeah.
Water flows are a concern for large soil absorption systems, and potential waste could flow off-site. Commenting on the proposal, Jennifer Ekstrom of the Idaho Conservation League noted the discrepancy between JUB Engineering and PhD's response to the application. Ekstrom said, quote, due to the significant discrepancy, I have a number of concerns. One is that the surface water could become contaminated with nutrients and bacteria that via the sewage saturated soil. This contaminated water could present a public health hazard on and off the site. Ekstrom cited Bonner County Code 1223, which states that before a CUP may be approved, the Zoning Commission must find that the proposed use will neither create a hazard nor be dangerous to persons on or adjacent to the property. Commissioner Chris Kingsland wanted to ensure that the Commission's decision on the CUP would not impact Panhandle Health District's nor Land Idaho Department of Environmental Quality's decision-making process. The permit application was approved unanimously.
Okayed.
One could say that that's a shitty situation.
Ding, ding, ding. There we are. We've made it to the swear,
man,
ladies and gentlemen.
That's what we take today,
ding,
you know?
Ding.
It's all downhill from here.
Local family seeks help replacing photos. Yeah. This is by Carolyn Lobsinger.
Yeah.
Chad and Lauren Lautzenheiser were woken up in the early hours of Wednesday morning by the smoke alarm. The couple only had time to grab her cell phone, which was sitting by the bed, before escaping the home.
Yeah.
Quote, a little after 3 a.m. on July 20th, we awoke to find the house on fire.
Oh.
It started in the home office, but it quickly spread, and the home was already filled with thick black smoke. While they lost everything, oh, that's sad. I'm sorry, I got very bummed out by this. Well, they lost everything, including their two cats and beloved chocolate lab. Bummer.
This is so sad.
That's really upset. My sympathies go out to this family. They had working smoke alarms, which alerted them to the danger, and none of their children were at home. The four oldest are grown, and their two teenage daughters were at a youth conference in Moscow. Quote, Chad and I barely escaped the house. I did not even have time to grab my purse. It was terrifying. Luckily, I had my phone right by the bed, and that is literally the only thing we got out besides ourselves. The home, located on Bearwood Lane off of Upper Pack River Road, burned to the ground and is a complete loss. Quote, it is a devastating loss and we are heartbroken, Lautzenheiser said. It feels so catastrophic, losing everything we own, especially family photos and mementos, but we are grateful to be alive. She said the family has good insurance and will be okay. Lautzenheiser said she and her husband moved to the Sandpoint area in July in 1997 and loved the community. Quote, we are blessed to live in Sandpoint and so appreciate how the people here rally to support those who suffered loss and grief. She said the family is truly grateful for the community's love and generosity, adding that they are being well cared for. The only thing they need help with is the memories. The only thing they need are copies of pictures that include their family and their kids, especially when they were younger. To share photos with the family, email them to Lauren, L-A-U-R-E-N, L-O-U-T-Z, @gmail.com.
Okay.
Hopefully they can get some of those memories
back. Get
some
solace, yeah. Yes. Absolutely. Yes. All right, moving on. Tuesday, July 26th, headlines. Last story for the day, Camp Bay Access Plans Unveiled. This is by Daniel Radford, following up on the last story. Differing visions of how to resolve a dispute over public lake access and private property rights have been introduced. In their proposal, Fred and Jennifer Arnn said they would support vacation of the last 526 feet of Camp Bay Road on the condition that M3 put in a boat launch that's, quote, accessible to the public. Also needed would be an easement for public access from the end of the public portion of Camp Bay Road. Other stipulations were that the county, quote, vacate only the final 526 feet of Camp Bay Road. There's a lot of parentheses there. As measured from the artificial high water mark. Additionally, the Arnns asked that M3 allow public access to parking and waterfront in Tract A of the first phase of the development, referred to as the community recreation area. Under the Arnns' plan, M3 would also be required to provide 50 feet of public beachfront. M3 would also agree to, quote, allow non-motorized pedestrian and bicycle access on or alongside Camp Bay Road for the public to, quote, access U.S. Forest Service lands located on track to be in the future phases of N3's development. M3 would also be expected to dismiss its pending petition for judicial review. Under the proposal, both sides would cover their own legal costs and would publicly support in front of the appropriate governmental authorities. Plan A also stated that M3 need not allow public access to the community docks and other structures associated with the community recreation area. In their proposal, Plan B, M3 officials offered a 10-foot-wide easement that follows alongside Camp Bay Road on the east side to where Camp Bay Road intersects with South Camp Bay Road. A lot of Camp Bay roads there. M3 would also construct a dirt path open to the public from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., and county deputies would be allowed to enforce easement terms. If the parties fail to reach an agreement, a hearing will be held on August 10th to decide if the court is qualified to determine the public access to Camp Bay Road.
Wowie zowie.
Sounds like that's not the end of it.
No, it does. Sounds like we'll be ridden Camp Bay Road a couple more times.
Yes, moving forward. Yes. America's gold and silver owned Galena Mine in Wallace, Idaho is currently accepting applications for the position of maintenance supervisor. The maintenance supervisor is responsible for overseeing all aspects of maintenance needs. Mm-hmm. The ideal candidate for the position would have an associate's degree in maintenance related fields, 5+ years of experience, and 2+ years in a supervisory role. This role is an excellent opportunity to work on a variety of projects, take charge of your career, and make a difference on a small team in a dynamic work environment. America's Gold and Silver offers competitive wages, a full employee benefits package, which includes medical, dental, vision, life and disability insurance, PTO, 401k, and pension plan. To apply to this and any other open position at the Galena Mine, visit www.americasgold.com/careers.
Ooh,
Molly.
Ooh, chance.
That's it for the day.
That's it for the day, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, absolutely. I'm tired now.
Woo! That'll do it.
I need to eat. I'm getting hangry.
Yeah, Chance needs to eat.
Yep, that's gonna happen. All right, everybody. Stay cool out there.
Stay cool. And we don't mean heat-wise. We mean, like, be cool, please. Chill out.
Stay classy, North Idaho.
That's right, baby.
Just imagine I was wearing sunglasses when I said that. See you, everybody.
Bye.